This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting college football bowl games, good luck. No, seriously, it's never been harder. And you don't want to be hurting your bankroll. You want to make sure you're doing your homework. Listen to Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I will be breaking down every single bowl game, dropping new episodes nearly every day throughout college football's postseason. Spicing things up with a 12-team playoff. Can't wait to see some of those teams from the South come up north for the snow. Be sure to subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's head out to the Wade4.com hotline, sort through this mess with our buddy Will McFadden from AtlantaFalcons.com. Will, two of the biggest NFL insiders with dueling articles talking about the future of Kirk Cousins in Atlanta, what they will do, what they won't do, $10 million kickers, $27 million in guaranteed money. What do you make from all of this? To the best of your knowledge, what do you foresee happening with Kirk Cousins, just so we could put all this nonsense to bed?
Chris, you know, I think honestly the safest way for me to answer this at the current present moment is I don't know. Just like everybody else, it seems, you know, you lay that out perfectly with the dueling reports. Usually in my experience, when you have kind of one thing come out, as Schefter's report did this morning, you know, saying what the expectation was, and then you kind of read through that, and it looks like a lot of that sourcing came from executives around the league, but not necessarily within Flowery Branch, right? So I totally get where they are coming from, because if you look at over the cap, if you look at Spotrac, if you just look at kind of the language of Kirk Cousins' contract and you connect the dots, then yeah, you would say, all right, the way that things have panned out, given, you know, kind of the no trade clauses and they would have to kind of work together on that. Yeah, you could say that if you work for another team or you have a lot of experience in this league, then here's maybe where it would land. And it kind of feels like that was initially, you know, that first report. And then it's just right now, like, there's so much that could still be in play. There are still three games left to go. Anything could happen in those three games. So I think at this point in time, to say for certainty, here is what will or won't happen. You know, like, let's take it back 1 year. If we were talking on December 21st, 2023, and you had asked, hey, are the Falcons going to go out and sign Kirk Cousins and then draft Michael Penix? Yeah, you know, like, I would have told you that you were crazy. And yet that is what happened. So I think kind of at this point in time, I don't want to mislead anybody. I think it's easy to connect the dots as Schefter and the executives that he sourced in their story was. But again, a ton can happen between now and then. So right now, I think it's really, truly a week-to-week thing.
Yeah, and I tweeted out earlier, it's like, at this point for Falcons fans, Will, it's like you dump your significant other, your boyfriend or girlfriend, and then you start worrying about who they're dating after you've already broken up with them. It's not something that's completely relevant right now when the Falcons have a playoff game tomorrow. That's just where my head's at with it. So all week around the branch, what was the vibe? How was Penix? How was Raheem in talking with the guys? What is the sense with the quarterback change?
Man, it was the longest short week of my life.
Right.
Coming off of the Monday night game that honestly, again, like, this has been a line I've used many times, and as so have a ton of people. Like, it was a win that didn't really feel too much like a win. And so then to come off the heels of that and everybody dragging in kind of bright and early Tuesday morning, even Raheem, as chipper and energetic as he often is, you could tell that it was like, man, we just played a Monday night game in Las Vegas, got on a flight, landed at 6 a.m. and came straight into work. So then to have the decision late Tuesday night to ultimately bench Kirk Cousins in favor of Michael Penix just started the busyness all over again. And honestly, you know, you ask what kind of the vibe was, it wasn't that difference. And I give a ton of credit to Raheem Morris and kind of the organization as a whole and the leadership in the locker room for that. I do think that Raheem, I know he's drawn a little bit of criticism, I think, amongst the fan base for either waiting too long or not being, in their eyes, like fully open and transparent. I kind of think he has been. You know, I think from the beginning, he has done a really good job of walking that fine line between holding players accountable and throwing them under the bus. And if you look at, or let's use the sacks, for example, right? D'Angelo Malone had 2 sacks on Monday night. He was a special teamer to start the season. They brought in Matthew Judon. You know who wasn't out there on that final possession for the defense? Matthew Judon. So you are seeing a culture where if you're not performing, we're going to find the guys who are, and we're going to put the best 22 starters out there who give our team the best chance to win. And that is exactly the message that the quarterback change, I think, sends in the locker room, is one of accountability. It doesn't matter how much guaranteed money you have on your contract. It doesn't matter kind of what you've done in the past. It matters what you're doing on Sunday. And it matters what we believe that you can do on the upcoming Sunday. And so that really, I think, has kind of galvanized the team a little bit. There was, you know, a little bit of initial shock when you talked to some of the players. Kyle Pitts says he was a little bit surprised, because I think just like the rest of us, they're aware of the situation. They're aware of what Kirk Cousins has done throughout his career. They're aware of the contract he was given. And that is, again, kind of why I think it took a little guts to make this move. But ultimately, I think it's reinvigorated, certainly me. Like, I'm very excited to go to Mercedes-Benz Stadium tomorrow and see what Michael Penix can do out there on the field. And after kind of rewatching some of his tape throughout his college run and seeing just kind of, again, the elite arm talent that he brings, the mobility, the pocket poise that I don't think he gets enough credit for, it's going to be fun. I think we're going to see a different style of offense. I don't think it's going to suddenly turn into the triple option out there, but it doesn't need to, because Michael Penix is great at playing from the pocket. You're going to see some deep shots. I'm really curious to see who he kind of connects with early on. So on the one hand, there's not much that I think has changed within the building from a feel point. But on the other hand, there's a little bit, I think, of excitement. Certainly you felt as the week went along and that initial surprise maybe wore off a little bit, the excitement really did begin to kick in.
Talking all things Atlanta Falcons with our buddy Will McFadden. Make sure you check him out on social media and read his work at AtlantaFalcons.com. You mentioned the game plan there, and Zach Robinson did say during the week that the full playbook is going to be available. I don't know how much they'll use it. Maybe that'll be determined on how much success they have early, but I know that you just said Michael Penix has all the physical traits and the tools, so do you think that it's going to be more of the same of what we've seen? Because the running game, Will, has been working pretty well, but now they have somebody back there that can do a lot of the things within the pocket, outside the pocket, and most specifically down the field that Kirk just wasn't able to get done the last few weeks.
Yeah, there are a few things that I do think. Well, you know, I was going to say kind of like the under center aspect of it, I don't think is going to be as big, but frankly, it hasn't been that big all season long, you know, and when people, I asked Raheem on Tuesday about kind of the mobility aspect in play action, right? Because they ran a couple of those play action plays, which is something that a lot of people have been clamoring to see Atlanta do, myself included, because that is just, in my opinion, an essential part of 2024 NFL offenses. You've got to have a kind of a dynamic play action package in the playbook. And I noticed just as they were running play action, it was kind of almost still like a straight drop back. You know, there wasn't any rollouts. There weren't bootlegs. They weren't moving the launching point all that much. And so I asked, you know, Raheem, like, what type of athleticism do you need for that part of your play action game to really come to life? And you know, he ultimately said, hey, either, you know, Chris, you or I could do that, right? Like, you don't need that much athleticism to be able to roll out to your left 4 yards. But I do think we are going to see more movements from the quarterback position, not necessarily scrambling, but just changing that launch point than we have before. And I do think we're going to see a ton of pistol. We're going to see a ton of shotgun because Michael Penix didn't really play under center all that much in college. So you're going to see him back there, but I also wouldn't be shocked if they kind of use that to their advantage with some of these maybe read option types of plays, which certainly we wouldn't have seen with Kirk, or some of these quick play actions, right? A fake handoff to Bijan and then boom, is that an element of the screen game where you get it out wide? And they're just some of these other wrinkles. But one other aspect to this that I am really curious to see is Michael Penix was their scout team quarterback for pretty much the entire season, right? Which not only means he's going up against the number one defense, so he does have a lot of reps playing against a starting caliber defense this season, but it also allowed the offensive staff to see him operate in a myriad of different schemes and looks and plays because they're trying to simulate what their opponents are going to do on Sunday. So he has essentially played in like 14 different offenses like this season, and they have seen how he operates. And so I really wouldn't be shocked if there are a few different wrinkles in the playbook for Sunday, in addition to it being the full menu that they would have had for Kirk, solely because they've gotten a chance to see Michael Penix do some different things by nature of the role that he played for this practice squad.
On the defensive side of the ball, Will, we've seen, unfortunately, a couple of times over the last few games that the defensive secondary has given up big days to a couple of different teams. The Broncos, the Vikings come to mind. Have you noticed anything in practice? Has anything been said by Jimmy Lake and his staff about helping out the secondary get back to what we know they can be? Because the talent's there with A.J. Terrell, Jesse Bates, Justin Simmons, but they've just been burned by the deep ball more than I think we all thought at certain points.
Yeah, you know, it really to me was that the first couple of plays against New Orleans, right, the first half against Los Angeles with Ladd McConkey, and then certainly that Vikings game, right? The Vikings game is by far, I think, the worst performance for the secondary, but ironically it was an excellent performance, I think, for A.J. Terrell against Justin Jefferson in that game. I think outside of that, though, the kind of combination of mentality and scheme with the talent on the field has kind of worked the way the Falcons would like it to. You know, they do want to ultimately limit some of those explosives, which is why I think it has been so notable the times that you do have Jordan Addison kind of wide open walking in and Justin Jefferson wide open and walking in, because it really hasn't been that way all too often. I think that as long as they're able to have the communication down and there aren't any of those clear breakdowns in assignment or role, which doesn't happen often when you have Justin Simmons and Jesse Bates on the back end kind of leveling that communication, then they're going to keep stuff underneath. They're going to rally and make the tackle, and they're going to try to make an offense march their way down the field. With the recent uptick in the pass rush since the bye week, which has honestly been really impressive. I'm still kind of not sure how they've managed to have such a turnaround, but that is what I think they want this defense to look like, is putting teams in a third and five or a third and six, and then getting to the quarterback, pressuring them and allowing the secondary to play a little bit tighter than they might on first and second down. So it's going to be a little bit of a challenge on Sunday with Drew Lock if he is the one who gets the start out there, and, you know, all indicators look like he will be. He likes to go deep, you know, at Missouri, we all saw what he could do, and he's got a great arm. And then also with Malik Nabers and Wandale Robinson, like there are some options in this passing game that I do think Atlanta needs to be keeping an eye on. But by and large, like as long as Atlanta doesn't go out there and make some of these mental mistakes, I like the way that the secondary has played for most of the season, even though the yards per catch and kind of those numbers would say otherwise. I just think that's a little bit of the nature of what they are schematically trying to do out there. And the pass rush has just been a part of that that has only really started to become effective.
You know, well, it's funny. We had Caden Ellis on Dukes and Bell on Thursday, and the guys asked him the same question. He said, "We absolutely have made changes, but I'm going to keep that in house and let other offensive coordinators try to figure that out." So something's happened.
I need to go ask him then.
Yeah, something happened, but they're not telling us what. So, and whatever it is, it's working. So good for them. I mean, better late than never, I guess, right?
Yeah, for sure. You know, again, if you can get pressure in Drew Lock's face, like I think you're going to be able to get some turnovers. And that is the element of this defense that was really working when they were winning a lot of games that kind of went away. And I asked Nate Landman about it. He said it was a number one priority for the defense. I believe I asked him just a couple of weeks ago down the stretch. So yeah, if the pass rush and the secondary can work in tandem, I think you'll start to see a lot more turnovers on the defensive side of the ball as well.
All right, well, appreciate the time as always. Enjoy the game tomorrow. We're all excited. It's Penix time, baby.
Heck yeah, let's go. Appreciate it, Chris. Anytime you need me, man. All right.